Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
So I'm going to look into something, and this is not going to be, I'm going to mention a band here, Sue, that most people will not be familiar with, but it's one of my favorite bands, and there's been an interesting development. I'll look into it. So they were just at the pageant a few months ago. You might remember I talked about this band, Coin.
I do.
And I'd never seen them before, and the new album is fantastic, and I really like a lot of their music. The song that people probably would I always refer to this as like Jane Duker's theme song, because it's called Talk Too Much. And really love this band. They've been together, I don't know, 13 years. So something kind of weird happened where they booted the drummer, and I never was quite sure what happened. And
recently?
A couple of months ago. So I'm tooling around because the grandchild was just here. If you missed that, we had Idris
so
and my son
cute.
And my son's girlfriend. But I was posting something on Instagram stories, and I noticed that Coin had a posting. And basically, the dude who runs the band, Chase, essentially says, and I'm going to look into this, I got rid of my drummer, and yesterday I fired my guitarist because their values do not align with mine. And he essentially, in this posting, said the band cannot continue. He said, unfortunately, these developments have led me to the decision that Coin can no longer continue as a band. I bring it up because, look, it's Trump derangement syndrome. I almost guarantee you that it's related to Trump.
Well, I'm reading an article about it. It says the Nashville pop rock trio Coin are breaking up due to misconduct allegations against two members.
Okay, so maybe something happened beyond that that sounds...
What does that mean?
Breaking up the whole... I don't know. Is it Me Too moment or something like that? But, I mean, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, this has been a very successful band. They're on their biggest tour ever, and he essentially said, nope, we're done. And refunds are going to be issued for anyone that's going to see the band. So I'm going to look into that more. Will you forward that to me?
Yeah, I will.
Because look, I'm making the assumption that it's related to Trump, and that's not always safe. Maybe it is different conduct because he talks about values, but it has to be pretty serious.
Misconduct. He said he found out something about somebody. Let's see. I recently became aware of revelations around my band-aids. I want to share thoughts directly with all of you. I believe in accountability and doing what's right. I made the decision to move forward without my drummer, and yesterday I parted ways with my guitarist.
Yeah, that's what the Instagram post said. But if you forward that to me, just because, again, I don't want to jump to the conclusion, but that doesn't happen very often. Bands break up all the time, all right? But they don't really peel off like this, where all of a sudden the drummer's gone and then the guitar player's gone.
That does not happen,
so it is unusual. Congressman Bob Anders coming up at the bottom of the hour. He was just in Doral, Florida with President Trump and other GOP lawmakers, and the S is getting done here in D.C. and beyond. I'm just going to say that, and I think Michael Goodwin is going to relate with that and agree with us this afternoon. New York Post columnist back with us on 97.1 FM Talk. Michael, how are you?
It's been extraordinary, I have to say. It's sort of the fastest out of the gate. And look, I think it's remarkable, but it also owes to, I think, to two things. One is that Donald Trump was president before, and so he knows something about everything in the federal government. And his campaign was brilliantly focused on the most important issues that the public cares about. And so when you put those two things together, he came in, you know, he won that election with a very focused idea on what he wanted to do. And he had the whole interregnum between the election and the inauguration to map it out. But even allowing for all of that, I am shocked when you read the big executive order he put out on day one. It refers to about 80 Biden executive orders. So somebody, and not him alone, I'm sure, had to focus on pretty much everything the Biden administration did on a number of key areas and then revoke them and lay out a new way forward for each of them. So a lot of work went into this, but a lot of very focused work and very knowledgeable work. So it was impressive, not just in volume, but in quality.
I agree, Michael. You said no president in modern history has come to the Oval Office better prepared and more determined to get big things done fast. I don't know if you saw Caroline this morning in the briefing, but I'm sitting there thinking I'm in a dream because all this stuff is being ticked off. You know, we got a guy, Will Scharf from St. Louis, that's in there with the executive orders. I'm stunned by how much they're doing right now.
Yeah, I watched Caroline Leavitt, the new press secretary, the youngest press secretary in White House history, 27 years old, a new mother, just extraordinary that her breadth of knowledge. I mean, I've spoken to her before, and there isn't much she hasn't been exposed to in terms of the issues, the politics. I mean, she's quite remarkable for someone with such a short horizon.
You know, and she announced, and I covered this a little earlier on the show, but she announced some changes today. First, Michael, I think you would agree with me that we have to take a moment, maybe a brief moment of silence for the departure of Jim Acosta at CNN. I'm sure you're broken up about that as well. But look, Caroline Leavitt made it very clear that there's some outlets and even podcasts that carry news and they cover news on a regular basis. And that press room is going to look different, and it should look different.
Yes. I mean, I think when you look at the chart now, and first of all, I should say, Mark, most people don't realize how small that room is. I mean, it looks big on television, but when you actually get into the room, there are, I don't know, roughly 40 seats or so, maybe 50 even, spread about over eight, nine rows. And then behind that, there are the camera risers. There's not a lot of room on either side. You could see today people standing too deep along the wall. The other side is doors and windows out, but it's a tiny space. And so what they're going to do is scramble the seating so that it's not dominated by the legacy media organization. She talked today about giving new media a seat in the room every day that there's an event, and whether it's podcasters and websites, all of them try, because she's right that particularly her generation gets its news not from the legacy outlets, whether it be print or broadcast. And so they really want to reach as many people as possible through as many outlets as possible. I think I'm all for it. I think that allowing the Jim Acostas and the New York Times and even the Associated Press and NBC and ABC to dominate the news gathering, to dominate the time in that room and the seats, and to get called on every day, I think is an outdated model.
Michael Goodwin is here from the New York Post. Look, I want to kind of segue into this point about the media and the AP in saying this. I have my character flaws, but I'm self-aware, Michael Goodwin. I'm pretty self-aware when it comes to those things. You got Zeke Miller from the AP asking this question this morning.
Thanks, Caroline. A question that we've asked your predecessors of both parties in this job. When you're up here in this briefing room speaking to the American public, do you view yourself and your role as speaking on, advocating on behalf of the president or providing the unvarnished truth that is, you know, not to lie, not to obfuscate to the American people?
Well, wait a second. Has he not been in that press room for the past 4 years, Michael Goodwin?
Well, and she gave back as good as she got, right? She said,
yes,
basically, yes, of course I'm going to tell you the truth, and of course I'm going to speak for the president. But I hope all of you will also tell the truth, and said, you know, there's been a lot of misinformation and lies that came out of this room from members of the media. I mean, I'm not quoting her, but that was roughly the point she made. And she's absolutely right. who can dispute? I mean, whether it's the misinformation on COVID, right? That, oh, it couldn't have possibly come from the lab in Wuhan, to censorship, to Hunter Biden, all of the things that Donald Trump, you know, why is it that the ABC had to pay Donald Trump a $15 million defamation fee?
Or CNN,
right?
A couple of times. Yeah, or so, the CNN. No, that was an uncovered story a couple of weeks ago, and I did cover it, but that CNN defamation trial that was Zachary Young, that was amazing, too. So they've racked up the decisions against them, CNN has. Congratulations.
Yes, and I think that there's some more outstanding cases. There's a couple of cases against CBS. So, look, I think the legacy media, and this is not just an advocacy point of view from you or me or Carolyn Leavitt. It is a fact based on Gallup and Pew big polls over the years showing that the decline in trust in the federal government is mirrored by decline in trust of the media. And I think that is the problem the media has to work out. The fact that it has covered up for the lies of the federal government has boomeranged both on the government and on the media. And so when you have a new president, it's the right time to try to reset all of this. And Trump, whether you love him or hate him, is the most accessible president we've had perhaps ever in the history of our country.
Hey, let's just take the last week and take everything else out of the mix. He's the most accessible ever just from the last week, which is kind of incredible. I've talked a lot about, I'm sure you've seen the meteoric rise of my dear friend, and I don't like this that he's gotten so popular because then I lose him here on this show, but my friend Scott Jennings. I've known Scott for a long time. He's been a contributor to my show for a long time before he blew up on CNN. But as you might know, you know, and you mentioned in your column, Michael, Dr. Patrick Shunshong, who is the owner of the LA Times, he invited Jennings to be on the LA Times editorial board. Some of the details and the specifics being left, you know, to some more steps that are going to be taken. But look, viewpoint diversity is what I think needs to be focused on. Not this other racial diversity, but viewpoint diversity in a newsroom is pretty important. And I think maybe we're going to take a few steps toward that.
Yes, I agree. I mean, that's what Jeff Bezos is arguing for at the Washington Post, effectively, as well, which is that I think Bezos, frankly, doesn't fully understand the issue. But it's not about your opinion columns, per se. It's really about your news coverage, ultimately. And, of course, you want to have a diversity of opinion on your opinion pages too, but it's the news coverage that's killing these legacy outlets. It's when their news coverage becomes slanted to fit into a narrative that which is essentially Democrats good, Republicans bad, Biden nice man, Trump beast. That kind of formula that they've done over the years and that which reached its nadir under on the coverage of Donald Trump in both terms, I think is what is killing these outlets because it's driving people away who don't see it the way they do. I mean, I sort of have to, it's almost comical now. The New York Times today, the lead column in the New York Times, the lead top of the paper, threatening his enemies yet to come. Trump looks ahead with acts of payback. That's their story. That's their story of the day about the president of the United States. I mean, it's all in their mind. That's what they've said it would be, and so they're now fulfilling their own narrative. It's not about the news. It's not about the facts. It's about what the New York Times wants its readers to know and believe. I mean, it's really malpractice. And if it weren't for the First Amendment, which we all love and revere, this would be a criminal offense. Now, I'm not saying it should be a criminal offense, but the journalists, these news outlets, have to get some control over themselves. I mean, this is crazy.
Yeah, they're
dividing the country this way.
Yeah, and they're abdicating responsibility. There's no doubt. And look, I'm not risk averse to pointing out some good journalism, and I think it's vital, Michael, and I think you would agree. Look, the New York Times did this amazing piece. It took a year to put together on the DEI, you know, situation at the University of Michigan. That was really good reporting. We have a local paper here, which has been, you know, pretty much agenda-driven journalism, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, but we had a pretty good detailed set of reporting from a journalist over there on a disaster that's occurring in St. Louis public schools right now. So that's why this stuff is so important, because otherwise it won't get covered.
Well, that's right. And particularly, I mean, I've been around to some different publications over the years and participated in some of the Pulitzer juries in the past and everything. It's the local coverage that matters to most readers. I mean, of course they want, you know, national and international as well. But fundamentally, it's the local coverage. And so many papers have gotten away from local coverage and have, you know, they're covering the White House. They're covering everything in Washington as though that's what matters. And they've forgotten the local, local, local. And I think that has destroyed a lot of journalistic organization, particularly in an era when you can get so much online. If you're in St. Louis, you don't need the Post-Dispatch to find out what's happening in Washington. But you do need it. You should be able to find it about what's going on down the block,
yeah,
what's going on in the local school system, the local hospitals, what the local crime. That's what I think a lot of media organizations got away from. They nationalized, in part because it's cheaper. Right. You can get your news out of Washington with one or two reporters, or you can buy the New York Times news service and you get your homogenized news from somebody else. That has been a very destructive decision by a lot of owners and editors over the years.
So I won't bore you with the story now, but put this in your head, because this will develop over the course of the next month. I'm struck up a relationship with the dean of my journalism school, the University of Missouri. I felt a little alienated from my J school, Michael, because of my politics.
Yeah.
And I've shared a little bit of the story, so I'm not going to waste the audience's time or your time. But next time I speak with you, I may have some interesting, you know, discussion about that topic of viewpoint diversity and, you know, journalism moving forward. So I'll share that with you in the coming weeks and when we have you back. But thank you so much for this. Happy New Year, Michael Goodwin. I hope all is well.
Oh, doing great. Thank you very much, Mark.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Republican Congress members are down in Florida with President Doral. Here's Speaker Mike Johnson talking about it.
The big decisions will be made here in the next few days, and we'll align with the Senate and our colleagues there, and we will move forward on that agenda. The reconciliation process, the appropriations that we have to wrap up, and the other issues that are upon us. So all the Republicans are rolling their sleeves up. There is a lot of work being done. There has been a lot of work done behind the scenes up to lead us to this point, and we are really excited to deliver for the American people, and we will.
I cannot tell you how excited I am because, and I think a lot of you share this, look, I framed this a little bit during the election. My first presidential election was 1984. I voted for Ronald Reagan. Philosophically, that's where I came of age. Politically, government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem. But I was honest. Look, Reagan didn't reduce the size and scope of government. Bush didn't do it. The next Bush didn't do it. Trump didn't do it the first time. This is a real opportunity to make impactful changes to the nonsense that's been going on for decades in Washington. And they are getting S done right now. In Missouri, 3rd District Congressman, the newest member of Congress from Missouri, along with Wesley Bell, is Bob Onder. And he's down in Doral, Florida, with the Speaker and with the President and other members. Bob, how are you this afternoon?
Hey, Mark, it's great to be back. Doing great.
How exciting is this? Because it's really impressive. It's one thing to make campaign promises. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. It's a completely different thing that in the first week, barely a week into the administration, all of this is being accomplished and being discussed and actual action is being taken, Bob.
Well, that's right. I mean, Mark, it is exciting to be part of this process. I was extremely excited about Donald Trump's executive orders starting the first day, the evening he was inaugurated. I think many of your listeners probably watched Trump's speech at the Dome in Washington, D.C. And our good friend Will Scharf, who I worked with in Jefferson City, was the one reading those Trump executive orders that evening, all the way to the most recent one, which I believe happened in the last hour. Donald Trump directing the government to no longer pay for pediatric so-called gender transition care. It just makes no sense that federal tax dollars are being used for the quackery and butchery being done to our children in the name of gender ideology. So I couldn't be more honored and thrilled to be part of this process.
So are all the Republican House members down in Doral or not?
Not everyone. I believe there are about 218 of us. I would say we're at about 180, but a good portion of the caucus.
Well, so what's the focus? Obviously, the work is being done. The team is putting things together. What are you mainly talking about down there in Doral moving forward?
Yeah, I would say the main thing we are talking about is the so-called reconciliation bill, that what Donald Trump has called the big, beautiful bill, in which we will renew the Trump tax cuts, the 2017 Tax Cut and Jobs Act, at the same time provide funding for border security, make sane changes to energy policy so that we can again exploit affordable energy in our country and not beg foreign dictators for oil. And in order to pay for those tax cuts, and I don't like to talk about paying for tax cuts, because after all, when we cut taxes, we're just allowing people to keep more of their own hard-earned money.
I'm with you on that, too. That's that Washington math that they use. But yes.
It's Washington math, but in order to avoid the filibuster in the U.S. Senate, where we do not have the 60 votes to avoid the filibuster, we have to do this game, this Washington math of, quote, paying for it. But in order to pay for it, we're going to do some things we ought to do anyway, like cut spending, like reform some of our welfare programs. You know, today, Mark, we have 10 million more Americans on Medicaid than we did right before the COVID pandemic. And likewise, since the COVID pandemic, we haven't been enforcing work requirements on TANF welfare checks and on food stamps. These work requirements have been phenomenally successful ever since Newt Gingrich and the Republican Congress and Bill Clinton passed welfare reform back in 1996. Not only do these reforms save money, but they restore to people the dignity of work. On average, it was found that a couple of years after the welfare reform bill of 1986, the average person leaving welfare was making twice as much household income as before the cuts. So we can do good policy and save money at the same time. And as you said in your lead-in, it is long, long, long overdue.
So let me get reaction to this. This is something the president said, I think, down there.
He's going to be very rich again, and it's going to happen very quickly. It's time for the United States to return to the system that made us richer and more powerful than ever before. Do you know, the United States in 1870 to 1913, all tariffs, and that was the richest period in the history of the United States, relatively speaking. In other words, relatively. And they set up the Great Tariff Commission of 1887, and this commission had one function, what to do with all the money that we took in.
Now, Congressman, I'm not smart enough to cross-check the math and to know how much might be involved here, but he seemed to be indicating that maybe tariffs could replace some, if not all, of the income tax.
Yeah. You know, since the 1910s, government has gotten so much bigger that we couldn't today replace the income tax with tariffs. But I think there is a recognition that tariffs are taxes and that, you know, that they do need to be, they could be used in places to generate revenue.
Let's have a discussion, right?
Yeah, that's part of the discussion. You know, of course, you know, the famous Hawley-Smoot tariffs indeed were taxes, and Hawley-Smoot followed a year or two later by a massive tax increase is a good part of what put us into the Great Depression. I think what Donald Trump is doing in many cases, as with the threatened 25% tax on Colombian goods on Sunday, he is using it as a negotiating chip. And there's no question there are trade partners. I hate to call China a partner, but there are those countries like China that have been eating our lunch, exploiting unfair trade practices, stealing our intellectual property, stealing our technology, you know, dumping goods in order to destroy our domestic industries. So I think the idea of just sitting back and taking it while other countries eat our lunch on trade policy is something that's going to end under Donald Trump.
On the immigration front, there's a lot of panic that is being exposed throughout the country. Look, I explained the situation this way to the audience a couple hours ago. I have a sister I love dearly. She works with some groups in Chicago, that Catholic charities that bring in some of the immigrants, not necessarily from South America or even Mexico, but from some countries where there really is, you know, an asylum process. And there's concern that the money is being cut off. Now, I heard Carolyn today in the press room, and by the way, I don't know if you got to see this, but she did a great job explaining that the spigot has been cut off temporarily to some of these programs, but individual assistance, if that has been established, is still going to come. But again, this is a situation where you're taking a look at these programs, you're reviewing them before you just open the bank account.
Well, that's right. And I think a big part of Donald Trump's cutting off the payments and loans today by executive order is in reaction to Joe Biden just opening the spigots of money as he left office.
He knew
full well that Donald Trump was going to be looking at DEI programs and green energy nonsense and funding for illegal immigrants and looking at it critically. So Biden pushed as much of the money out the door as quickly as he could, as the days and even, I believe, hours before he left office. Trump is putting a pause on that. But yeah, I mean, sure, look, there is such a thing as a legal asylum seeker where a individual really does fear political persecution in his country of origin. But that's not what brought us 10 million illegal aliens in the last 4 years.
Exactly.
The word asylum is being abused grotesquely, and Donald Trump and the Republican Congress are going to put an end to it.
Absolutely, Bob. Good answer there. Hey, did you know anything about this? This kind of caught me off guard.
Doge and OMB also found that there was about to be $50 million taxpayer dollars that went out the door to fund condoms in Gaza. That is a preposterous waste of taxpayer money. So that's what this pause.
I don't know what that's about. $50 million for condoms. Do you know anything about that and what the hell that's about?
I saw that, too. And I don't know what program that was going to go through, but I saw that. And was that Carolyn Leavitt's speech there?
Yeah, that was her in the press room.
Yeah, I mean, well, this just shows how government can waste money on the most preposterous things. And give me a break. But I think we're going to be hearing about even worse than that over the past over the next few months, I think we're going to be appalled at what our tax dollars have been paying for. But you know, welfare, Medicaid for illegal aliens, you know, mutilating procedures on our kids. Donald Trump and the Republican Congress are going to put an end to all this nonsense.
On the $50 million for condom front, apparently there was. I mean, it appears as if some of this money was actually going to be used to send this to people in Gaza, and they've used those condoms in nefarious ways to float things over Israel. I don't know exactly how all that works, there's some details here that are rather shocking when you look into it. Hey, one more question, Bob. Have you had discussions down there about disaster relief? I thought it was very impressive and the wise and smart move that President Trump not only visited California, but he first went to Helene victims in North Carolina. But obviously, in conditions are going to be put on California, this is going to be something that the federal, you know, you and the feds are going to have to probably address. So is that being discussed down in Doral right now?
You know, we haven't discussed that very much. We've mostly been talking about the reconciliation bill, and I do not believe that a disaster relief will be part of the reconciliation bill. It may be tied to debt relief down the road, but I don't think we know the full scope of the damage. But yes, I think we do need to put conditions on the disaster aid in California. It was disastrous policies by Gavin Newsom and the Democrats that made this wildfire disaster way worse than it would have been if it would have been at all. So it's time for some accountability.
Well, Bob, I appreciate it. Thank you. Enjoy the time down in Doral. Sounds like business is being conducted and goals are being set, and I think that's what the American people want. I will say this. Did you get to see that you were probably busy with some of the stuff that you're doing down there. Did you see Carolyn in that briefing today?
I did not. I read some quotes from it. I did not see her. I saw Donald Trump last night and J.D. Vance at lunch this afternoon. So,
You had more important things. I get it. But Carolyn did a great job. And by the way, speaking of great jobs, how about J.D. Vance?
Impressed by Carolyn.
Yeah. Yes, how about J.D. Yes. Vance with Face the Nation? What's her name the other day? Because that was pretty impressive as well.
It's incredible. We have the right people at the right time for this job.
Well, thanks, Bob. Good luck with everything. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. Look forward to it.
Congressman Bob Onder. I can play some of the audio that I didn't play before because Carolyn was real impressive in that briefing today, but there were a couple of things that I haven't really talked about that emerged from there, and I might have to get to it here in audio cut of the day because I'm finding not exactly what I'm looking for. I didn't talk about The View yesterday, though, Sue. Let's address The View and what they're saying on deportations.
But I think there's a very clear message as to what this president wants the look of a criminal migrant to look like, what an undocumented migrant. And I think that's racist.
Yeah, of course. Everything's racist for her.
They are also racially profiling in doing this. I am disappointed, disgusted, and saddened by what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I think that's Whoopi saying. What in the world is she disgusted by? You know what the rest of us are? This is what Sonny Hostin and the crew from The View, they don't get. The rest of America, 95% of Americans, even those who voted for Kamala Harris, were disgusted by millions and millions of people flooding across the border with no accountability whatsoever, committing crimes, raping women, killing women. Clearly, and I've said this before, and I think I have a perspective that might be a little unique. I haven't spent a lot of time in third world countries, but I've been to Honduras. I've seen how people live when they don't have water, running water, electricity, heat. And I understand, I do, I understand, I have a deep understanding of why someone would want to come to this country to make their life better, to make their life better for their family. But there is a process.
Yes.
And we have people who have gone through this process, they're very proud to be Americans, and it's taken some work. And they've also, you know, one of the things that doesn't get discussed ever when it comes to immigration, maybe now it will, is assimilation. And I think that, you know, it's incumbent upon people who come to this country, some people disagree with this, you have your culture, you have your language, but how about our language and how about our culture? If you want to be an American, let's kind of take a step at being an American. Some of that might be learning English. Now, that's a tough thing. I don't, Sue, this is racist, bigoted, all of those things, xenophobic. I just simply don't understand how someone could come to this country and be here for, and let's face it, we got baseball players who this applies to, been here for, you know, 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and they don't speak the language.
Yeah.
That's their choice, of course. I'd have a hard time believing that if I would move, boy, I love it down there in Todos Santos, Mexico. If I retired down there, John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin lives down there. You know, maybe we can hang out or something like that. I'd have a hard time believing that I'm not going to assimilate and learn the language so I can communicate with people.
Now, I know.
I get it that tourist destinations, and if you go to Europe, you're going to find English is used, you know, a lot. But there's no attempt at assimilation. And I think that's a problem. I really do. I think it's unacceptable.
Well, it erodes American
Thank you.
If
that's
right. Makes sense.
That does make sense. Speaking of Americanism, that will lead us into audio cut of the day from Anthony Mackie, the new Captain America, who pretty much put the kibosh on some big box office for that movie. We'll explain coming up. Hey, how about this one, by the way? JoJo, Boss Skaggs. You weren't in here when I played the first half. I was toying with a little bumper music idea. Now, I must confess that the only person that really cares about my bumper music is me, but I do publish the list every day, and I get inquiries from listeners every once in a while. Do you know this song? This is a Eric Clapton song from the record Backlist, which I think was 1975, 1976. Backlist was one of the first, you know, I always talk about these first 20 records. Like when I moved to St. Louis, there's a picture from my bedroom where you could see about 15 to 20 records. And Backlist was one of the first records I ever bought on my own. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, some Led Zeppelin, UFO. But that's a song that most people wouldn't know. So I was toying with this idea, and I don't know why I chose Thursdays. But I chose Thursdays, Sue. What if I would do, again, the only person that would care about this is me, but I would do Deep Cut Thursdays, where the bumper music wouldn't be the hits that you would know necessarily, but a deep cut from the album, Sue Thomas.
I don't think that's bad. I mean, some of the stuff you play, I've never heard of anyway. So
yeah,
you might as well go deep cut on a band I know.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Right. There, I like that idea. So I might try to implement that, but I sort of did it accidentally today. I have so much audio that I want to share, and I have audio cut of the day, so I may just encompass all of it, because if you weren't here for the beginning of the show, Carolyn Leavitt, who's the new White House press spokesperson, really hit a home run. I mean, I would say a grand slam. She came into that room with no binder. She had some notes.
Yeah.
Jackie Heinrich said, "Where's your binder?" She said, "My binder's in my head." She's only 27 years old, and I mean, I admitted this at the beginning of the show. My instinct is, as an older dude who's been around for a long time and who has children that are Carolyn Leavitt's age, to say, wow, you don't have enough life experience or knowledge or breadth of knowledge to handle an important job like this. Now, having said that, we know that Karine Jean-Pierre managed to hold on to that job for I don't know how long, but she did a great job. And
she's, you know, just super smart.
She is. And it's been, you know, there's a reason that she was chosen because of her performance on the campaign trail. A lot of people were encouraging Trump, and I'm glad that this didn't happen. And I don't think even if he was offered, he would have taken it. But a lot of people wanted Jennings because they thought Jennings would do a good job. I love the fact. But, you know, the other thing about Carolyn is Trump hates women. He hates them so much. He never puts women in positions in the administration.
Yeah,
so you just have
except,
to remember that. Is that the one?
It's only the question.
Okay. That's thank you. I screwed something up earlier and I wanted to correct it. And Ethan is helping me correct it here. Let me get to audio cut of the day. We'll kind of wrap everything into this.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, so, you know, she made some announcements, and some of the things that happened today are really, really interesting. Like, they're going to welcome new people into the briefing room. They're offering press credentials to non-traditional outlets. The media, journalism with a capital J, has changed. There are podcasters, bloggers that have just as much influence as old media. Certainly, I'd say more influence than CNN,
et cetera. Oh, for sure.
So, she gets this question here.
Thanks, Caroline. A question that we've asked your predecessors of both parties in this job. When you're up here in this briefing room speaking to the American public, do you view yourself and your role as speaking on, advocating on behalf of the president, or providing the unvarnished truth that is, you know, not to lie, not to obfuscate, to the American people?
Now, I could not have scripted that better from this idiot from the AP. That's a reporter for the AP that's in that briefing room, has been there for a long time. Apparently, Zeke Miller has been ignorant about what's happened in that briefing room for the past 4 years. He's trying to put Carolyn Leavitt on the record for saying we're going to tell the truth when there have been so many lies from that briefing room time and time again. And Carolyn Leavitt's response was amazing.
I commit to telling the truth from this podium every single day. I commit to speaking on behalf of the President of the United States. That is my job. And I will say it's very easy to speak truth from this podium when you have a president who is implementing policies that are wildly popular with the American people. And that's exactly what this administration is doing. It's correcting the lies and the wrongs of the past 4 years, many of the lies that have been told to your faces in this very briefing room.
Thank you, Carolyn Leavitt, for pointing that out. She went on.
I will not do that. But since you brought up Truth Seek, I would like to point out, while I vow to provide the truth from this podium, we ask that all of you in this room hold yourselves to that same standard. We know for a fact there have been lies that have been pushed by many legacy media outlets in this country about this president, about his family, and we will not accept that. We will call you out when we feel that your reporting is wrong or there is misinformation about this White House. So, yes, I will hold myself to the truth, and I expect everyone in this room to do the same.
I love it. All right, so the questions, you know, I was watching all of this. The questions start. You got the idiot from the AP. And then you have Peter Alexander from NBC. Again, there is such a lack of self-awareness from these people in the room. They have no idea, I guess, what has happened in the past few years. And they still have a very, very tough time distinguishing between what is legal and what is illegal immigration.
Very quickly, just following up on the question on immigration first. President Trump, during the course of the campaign in 2024, said the following about illegal immigration. He said, they're going back home where they belong, and we start with the criminals. There are many, many criminals. NBC News has learned that ICE arrested 1,179 undocumented immigrants on Sunday, but nearly half of them, 566 of the migrants, appear to have no prior criminal record besides entering the country illegally. Is the president still focused exclusively, which is a civil crime, not a, it's not criminal.
It's a federal crime.
So I'm asking, though, he said he was going to focus on those violent offenders first. So is violent offenders no longer the predicate for these people to be deported?
The president has said countless times on the campaign trail, I've been with him at the rallies, I know you've been there covering them too, Peter, that he is focused on launching the largest mass deportation operation in American history of illegal criminals. And if you are an individual, a foreign national, who illegally enters the United States of America, you are, by definition, a criminal.
Yeah, they don't get that. I mean, that they don't understand that if you're a violent criminal and ICE is trying to get you, and they see some other folks that have broken the law because they're not supposed to be here, well, we're going to send them back too. It's really not that tough. And then there's Anthony Mackie, who I'm hoping deep down has just killed the box office for the new Captain America movie, because he actually really said this, the new Captain America?
To me, Captain America represents a lot of different things, and I don't think the term, you know, America should be one of those representations. Like, it's about a man who keeps his word, who has honor, dignity, and integrity. Someone who is trustworthy and dependable.
I thought that was AI. I couldn't believe that that's real. And to the makers of that film, and to Disney, and to Anthony Mackie, I say F you with the biggest middle finger that I can have, and I hope your movie fails miserably. Hey, on that note, have a great night. We'll talk tomorrow at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com.